This episode is brought to you by Upstart. More on that later. Let's get into the Dew.
You're listening to The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to The Honeydew, y'all. We're over here at Studio Jeans doing it at your mom's house. I'm Ryan Sickler. Ryan Sickler on all social media. RyanSickler.com. Make sure you sign up for my newsletter there on the website. Make sure you check out the tour dates. I'm back out with Tom Segura in October, coming out to see you guys. And the HoneydewPodcast.com is the website for the show. And as I always say, thank you. Thank you to every single one of you for everything, all the feedback, the messages, the emails, all of it. It's important. I appreciate you supporting the show. The best way to support the show is to engage with the sponsors, and I know you guys are out there doing that. Thank you very much. And if you're new to the show, these are the stories behind the storytellers, all right? We highlight the lowlights over here. Today's storyteller, it's a pleasure to introduce for the first time here on The Honeydew, ladies and gentlemen, Jamie Kennedy. Welcome to Honeydew, Jamie Kennedy.
Thank you for having me, bro.
Thank you for being here. I know we've talked about this for a little bit.
Yes, we have.
Well, before we get into any of your stories, please feel free to plug whatever you'd like.
At Jamie Kennedy on Twitter, The Jamie Kennedy on Instagram, Jamie Kennedy on Facebook, JamieKennedyWorld.com is my website, you know, the basic
podcast.
I have a podcast, but it's hard to do. it is.
What do you mean?
You need a fucking team. I've done, let me see. I've done 12 episodes over 2 years. A new episode's coming in 2020. It's fucking hard, man. It is hard.
I know. We have a great team of people.
You
over
need
here.
People, but it's called Hate to Break It to You. And, it was all like, you know, shit that like I believe is honest. Like, you know, how we are, hypocrisy of life, we point that out. And so it's really like me trying to break down the hypocrisy of shit. But I did 12 episodes. I'm going to do another one soon. It's a lot of fucking work.
Episode 13's coming.
Episode 13's coming soon. It's coming. 2020. It's just because you got to edit it. And then it's like you said this. And did I say that? And, you know, I look weird. A booger in my nose. You know. So, but I gotta do it.
Make sure you're up.
I gotta do it because this is the new. So everything is. This is another Facebook.
This podcasting. Is not. This is
no podcasting is literally then it's another handle, man. It's like Netflix and podcasting made comedy.
No doubt.
Yeah,
I say all the time though about podcasting. This might be the only thing in our careers that you get 100% complete. Creative control,
dude.
100%.
100. Yeah.
Like, no FCC. No executives. No managers. No agents telling you can't say that. Don't say it like that. Got to do this. Got to do this. Got to do this. You know what you should do? You should do it like this. You should shut the fuck up. And let me do my show the way I want to do my fucking show.
Yes. That's what it is. It's like they try to. That's the dude. They try to fucking curb you, and this is like your creative stream. And now I used to think. That there were so many
podcasts. The reason so many popular podcasts are blowing up is because these people have always been right. They have been funny. You know, there's been this wall that's the other side, and there's only so many people that these agents and everyone works with. They're going to let the people see him and her and him and her. But the whole time, like, what about all of us back here? And these podcasts now have just right over top of that wall, and you're out there and... We've been right all along, and people love it.
I totally agree. Like it's like there was like everyone 25,000 people are fighting for two spots, dude. Right. I hate the gatekeepers, and I've had success within the community, and I still hate it.
Right.
So it's like I agree with you. It's like about finding your own little fiefdom. You know what I mean?
So let's get into learn a little bit more about you. So I know you're from Philly originally.
Yes, your accent is even like the accent I can't stand the most is Philly. So if you're like going to throw up, like when you hear an accent, it's Philly. But the accent that you want to throw up and have diarrhea on top of is Baltimore. this fucking guy, right?
I was just there.
He's from Baltimore.
Yeah, you nailed it.
Dude, I've got a lot of time in your fucking area.
What did you spend?
First of all, you're from Philly. I mean, you're from Baltimore. Yeah. So Philly and Baltimore share a thing.
We're your fucked up cousin.
Yeah, but you guys are even more legit. Like we like threw snowballs at Santa. You guys like threw like rusty screwdrivers. Like... And like Colin Quinn, like the first time I ever met him, the impression's not right. He's like, oh, you're from Philly? He's like, oh, fuck it. At least Baltimore knows it's not a city. Philly actually thinks it's a fucking city. At least Baltimore knows it's a fucking armpit. That's what I think he said. And I was dying. I was like, really? And then I shot a movie. I've relatives in Silver Spring, Maryland, so okay. I did a lot of time in Maryland, which is not Baltimore. That's like beautiful compared to Baltimore.
It's outside of D.C.
Yes, and then I shot a movie called Enemy of the State, which is an amazing experience. But like, it was a time when you would shoot a movie for 6 months, and you know even if you had like 2 or 5 scenes, because they would just like with something called run a picture, and so I shot probably 3 months. I lived at the harbor.
You did? That's where they put you up?
They put me up, and I... That Hooters?
Yeah. That was... I know that Hooters.
That was my commissary.
I dated a girl at work.
You dated? Why did you date? You could just get wings and handle it. So that was crab feast all day. I mean, that was... But it was... Yeah, I had some good times down there in Baltimore, and, you know, hopefully nobody documented it.
So, Philly, what's it like? Your parents, you said, were stayed together, you told me.
Yeah, my parents were... Dude, they're married for 61 years.
Damn, how many
61
kids?
61 years, 6 kids.
6? You're one of 6?
I'm the last one.
I'm the baby?
I'm the mistake. I'm definitely...
Were you really an oops baby?
Yeah, it was like 5.5 years between me and my sister. Yeah. And it's like, there was no plan.
Have you tried to backdate it to what might have happened that 9 months before that they were celebrating and you showed up, ruined everything?
Oh, I didn't really. Jesus, that is what a way to document your existence.
When were you born?
you should backdate to when your dad should have pulled out, busted on the knee.
Were you born?
I was born in May. 25th.
So 9 months before May.
At September ish.
You're five. Yeah, about that.
Wow, that's
August summer. It's the end of summer.
End of summer.
Labor. It was Labor Day fucking weekend.
Woo!
There it is, right there.
Ooh!
Yeah.
I don't know. I think they just took what they get. You know what I mean? It's like there was.
What's the age difference between the
me?
Oldest
my
and
sister's
you?
5.5 years older than me.
The oldest though.
And the oldest is I'm 49. The oldest is 62.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
are you close?
We're all very, very different. Yeah. We're all very headstrong, and what we share is this bloodline. But we're all very fucking narcissistic. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, but we're good. Actually, we're closer, you know, lately. So,
were you just the being the baby? You're the one they let do whatever, get away with whatever. They're like, fuck it, we've raised these 5 kids. This one's getting.
Kinda. Like I was definitely, I was raised kind of by TV. I mean, that's why I think I became an actor and a comedian. I was raised. I was able to have a little black and white TV mm-hmm. next to my bed, which became color in the late 70s, and that's where I watched all the Tonight shows. And then in the early 80s, I used to watch Jack Tripper, Too Close for Comfort. That raised me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I always said my parents were tired. You know what I mean?
Fuck
so
yeah.
I got to do a lot. And I got to experience the city a lot because of that.
What did your dad do?
My dad, he worked for GE. I still, to this day, don't know what he did.
No? For GE.
He worked for GE. He's from the South, and he talked like... For Foghorn, Leghorn, and my mom would drop him off, and I was like with him. I'm like, Dad, what do you do? He's like, I work in there, right in there. You see that big, ugly building right there with the smokestacks? I'm like, yeah. He's like, yep, that's where I work. That's where my soul dies. And he was some type of machinist. What is that? What's a fucking machinist?
I don't know.
It's like somebody like makes the machines, like whatever. I think he was literally like a hardcore blue collar job of of like melting
making
down
bolts
metal
for like
yes.
fucking dishwashers,
like, all
and
of
shit.
That shit. Yeah, right. So that's yeah. what he did, and he that was a fucking yeah. That's a he's a beautiful soul, and he you know he sacrificed his life for us. It's you know it's incredible.
And what about your mom?
My mom also a beautiful soul. She's very very smart. She was a paralegal. So okay. my dad like worked over there, and my mom worked for in Philly for like a big law firm.
Okay.
So she was like always. So we had a lot of nice things and side stuff because my mom was always in high society and my dad was always making good money doing a job he hated. And so it was a mix. I really believe the way I am is because of my parents. My dad was an extreme dreamer, like amazing dreamer. And my mother was extremely practical. So it really fucking, you know.
You gave you both sides.
I think so. I think so. You know, this just got really serious.
That's what we do over here.
I like that.
And what kind of, did you get in trouble a lot as a kid or were you like into mischief? What was your thing? You said you got to see a lot of the city. So did you venture out? What was up?
I mean, like I went to Catholic school, dude.
You did?
Yeah. And it was like, I think about why I am the way I am.
Yeah.
It was like, I was born like, with whatever energy I have, like a fucking spaz. And then I was the sixth kid, not planned, Irish, Catholic, going to fucking that school. So I felt like every fucking layer of a thumb on a thumb. And I'm already like, blah! You know, so it's like, I just felt like, you know, Ren and Stimpy just always went, blah! You know, like. So I was always doing voices and fucking around, and people either loved me or thought I was crazy.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But like girls would be like, you're weird. Like that was like the thing, but like eventually they were like, but like, yeah, like I'll make out. He's weird, but I'll try it. It was like a weird,
I'll try it.
It was like that weird pixie stick. One flavor, I don't know. It's like that Coca-Cola pixie stick. I don't think we got them that much.
Were you a good student?
Oh, I was 1 year to prove my mom.
1 year.
1 year, I made super honor roll, the top of the honor roll in fifth grade to let my mom know I could do it. And I go, there, I did it. She goes, why don't you do this every year? And I'm like, because it's boring. Like, she didn't get it. Like, I hated school. I think school stinks. I think college is a scam. I mean, how do I really feel? I think it's like, unless you go to school for a certain degree, what's the point? Like, these, it's like bullshit. Like, everything I learned on the playground. I learned on the streets. I learned at the basketball court. I learned on the subway.
Yeah.
I learned at the pizza shop. I learned about, Philly is all about intermingling. And Jackie Gleason, he has a great book and he talks about there was not an unfunny kid in Brooklyn. And I feel like Philly is like that. And I'm sure Baltimore is like that.
I mean, I know my circle was. Everybody was funny.
Everybody was funny.
Person was funny.
And dude, I mean, I came from a pretty good area. I can't tell you how many people are dead or in jail. Or super
addicted.
Successful.
Yeah, right.
Or addicted.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa. And it's like, you got to look at that stuff. But there was a lot of characters and funny people. And that's what you did to survive. And I think that, you know, my path was my path. But I never wanted to. I hated school. It was so repressive.
Yeah. So were your parents older when they had you then? How old?
About 42.
Okay.
That might explain some of the mild Asperger's. I wanted to say more, but you can't say it. It's 2019. You know what I'm saying?
So you are 49 now. Your parents are gone?
Yeah, they both passed away.
Would you mind talking about it? Who went first?
My dad. It was the beautiful thing ever. You know,
how did he pass?
I have zero regrets. It was my father, you know, like they got to see me do everything in life.
I was going to ask, good.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, my name is, you know, I'm on many things, and my name has been at Man's Chinese 3 times in a movie poster. I mean, that's pretty amazing. So it's like,
especially if you're a parent to see your kid, like, it's one thing to achieve that as you, but another thing for your parents to look at that and be like, look at that shit right there, man.
Yeah. And that's like, they were with me.
That's great.
And, you know, but like the only thing they've ever seen me be is like get married and win a major award. You know, and I think I'll probably win an award before I get married, you know, but I think, but my father slowly he had lung cancer. He smoked like a wild man, and he lived a long life. He died when he was 86, but he literally died with my whole family.
You were all there.
Oh my God. It was like a movie that you don't think is real. Like, we were literally there playing music every day, and every day he got a little, slipped a little more, and it was beautiful. I mean, I don't know how he felt, the poor guy. I have no idea what he was going through, but he was talking to us, and it was very, 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 very spiritual.
That's great.
It was unbelievable, and I was there holding his hand.
Wow.
I know. I've never said that, man. So it's like, it's a lot for me to tell you that.
You held his hand as he as he passed?
All of my sisters.
Wow.
My brother, we're all just, it's the most perfect way ever. Like, just
looking. Yeah, I mean, that's dream scenario. Those are people also say, I want to die in my sleep. And how rarely that happens, too. But I want to die with my family around me. It doesn't happen a lot.
No.
Yeah.
In his bed. In his room.
Oh, it wasn't in a hospital. Mm-mm. It was at home. Mm-mm. Okay. Mm-mm. And how was your mom with that?
My mom.
I mean, this is the band she's been with her whole life, pretty much.
She was very strong. She made peace with it. Very, 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 you know, she was the rock of the family. And my brother had a great quote. He said, you know, when dad died, the family, the house kind of, you know, it something loses from the house. You know what I mean? The foundation rumbles. But when, you know, mom dies, then the house it crumbles, because now your two rocks are there, and they're there. So it's like your neighborhood is gone. Your house is gone. Where you lived is gone. That was very difficult to, but it was, my mom was a little harder because she went, you know.
How long between your dad's passing and your mom's?
3 years.
3 years.
But she was also very sick, you know, and I got to spend a ton of time with her, and it was, you know, we did a lot. It's just, I'll tell you this, I do have, you know, more, it was harder with my mother because I wasn't as clean, you know what I mean? She went in the middle of the night.
She did?
Yeah, and I just had left like 3 days before because I had shows and stuff, but I've been going back every other week, and you know, you know it can happen. But, you know, I'll tell you this to anybody out there, you know, just get that last moment in, because I'm still fucked up about it. I'm still like, I wanted to have that moment of like, mom, I love you. You know, you were a wonderful mother to me, and boom, and just get that last,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Bit of in. And I didn't get that, but we had a lot of conversations. I just wanted to say bye properly. And that's hard.
I didn't get that for anybody in my family. Mm-hmm. My one, she's my great aunt, my grandmother's sister, my Aunt Helen. There was a time where right before, obviously she was older, 80s, late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I was home in Baltimore, and just at that age, she just wasn't sleeping. She was always awake, you know? So I stopped by with one of my cousins at like 12:30 in the morning, fully expecting not to get in. She'd be asleep, wide awake. Went upstairs, and she was talking to one of her girlfriends on the phone, hung up, and we just laid in bed with her, just sat there and talked for, I don't know, an hour or two about everything. And then I flew home, and very shortly after that, she passed away. That's the only person I've been able to do that with. Everybody else was either I discovered them, I'm giving them CPR, or I'm getting a fucking phone call about them. You know what I mean? It's never. That's why I say to get to be... So you had it with your dad, and you wanted that with your mom.
I had it. Yeah. I'm so blessed,
I mean,
bro.
That is an amazing way to go, leave this earth, too,
I have
for
no,
him.
Yeah, like I Hell have yeah. no, I know. It's like you hear about that. Ooh, like you yeah. want to be surrounded by your loved
That's
ones.
Movie script shit.
Yeah.
Yes.
When you're 80s, he was late 80s. My mom was almost 90. And my mom had beaten death about 30 times. Like, there's crazy car accidents and operations, and she's incredible. So I took it for granted. She's an iron woman. So I'm 95% peaceful with my mom's passing. It was just that one last moment. But again, I'm measuring it against Hollywood script,
right.
what my dad was. So I mean, I'm very fortunate, man. I've had my parents, you know, my whole life. I can't, so many kids in my neighborhood, I'm mirroring our existences. Didn't know their dad, never had a dad, in jail. I mean, you know, so it's, I'm very, very fortunate.
And then moving through your career after that, does it change you in a way? Or you, does it shift anything for you now that your parents are gone? I know we're going to talk about some of the,
you know, I was thinking
low lights of career stuff, but just yeah. moving, but being you and being in entertainment, excuse me, after your parents pass, does it shift anything for you or change in any way?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, no. Like, I was thinking about this last night in my kitchen that you say that. And it's like, I was very peaceful. Like, I had a good cry from my dad and a good cry from my mom. And that was it. Like, people are like, make sure to mourn. Get your mourning in. And I'm like,
yeah, right.
So like one day I sat in my house and I'm thinking of my dad and I'm like trying to cry, and I cried a little bit, but I felt like, okay, it was like 30 minutes and I was like, okay, did that mourn? You know, like, and then I did it with my mom and I felt like maybe I made peace with it, you know, because I had such a long time. I had half of it,
right.
like 5 years sure. each of them being sick. And seeing and all of my relatives coming in and seeing them. So I was really, I'm telling you, it's like, I don't wish death on anyone. But if you could, the Jamie Kennedy script. But I'm my own person. Like, I've been making my living and being this since I'm 20 years old. Mm-hmm. And I've always, like, I was talking to somebody last night. It's like, I came to Hollywood for the love and attention that I didn't get, that I feel. And I mean, I did get it, but I didn't get the way I needed it.
Sure.
I don't
Child
need...
number six. For
yeah. Whatever. I mean, listen, I had a great life, but you know, we all have our issues, right? So I realized that. And I'm like, I've always been taking care of myself, always been making money, always living, you know, have my house. So it's like, my mom was, dude said, we gave, when she was dying, she said, always remember this. We gave you roots and wings.
That's nice.
Dude, I
come almost, on.
Yeah, like she basically said, like, you know your home is, but fly away.
Yeah.
And, you know, wow. and I, yeah, right. And I think about that. And it's
That's
like,
deep.
It is, right? Like, and I always thought, like, she always was basically saying, the nest is open if you want to come back. But I never wanted to go back. And it was there. So I think that's why I'm not married. I think that's why I never had, like, you know, ever got married yet, because I always felt like, well, I always got this pad. You know what I mean? And my parents were very good about that.
Yeah.
But they're also enabled us in bad ways, like, you know, some ways. But it's they're very fortunate. Damn, I'm stumbling because you got me all emo. Well, I don't. You know what's funny? Because I don't talk about that shit's private. Like. And I could talk about it with you, but it's like...
There's more than just me.
No, but I just... No, I know.
Yeah, I know.
I know, because it's like, this is fucking private, man. So I don't want fucking people to be weird about it. But it's like, people put these pictures on and all this stuff, and everybody has their own process. But like, I never put any of that on my Instagram or anything. This is my shit. It's mine. It's my passing. And it's like, that's not... I don't know.
It's just one of those things for you. That's
well,
not
because I
for
just
everyone.
Think it's like everything doesn't have to be shared. Is that
right.
bad?
No.
You know, I had a fucking burrito today. I didn't take a picture. Is that okay?
Did you? I forgot what I was going to ask you.
Sorry.
No, don't be sorry. With does it? I know what I was going to ask you. Does any moment ever catch you off guard? Like, I know you say you were at peace with it and you had a good. You know, saying goodbye, all that, you feel at peace, you got to say what you want to say, but Like for me, even still, my dad died when I was 16. This is 30 years ago. And still, I'll be in the fucking grocery store and some song will come on. I'll be like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Where you don't see it fucking coming. You don't even know your nerves were raw like that.
Yeah.
Do you ever get tripped up like that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What gets you?
Just thoughts. The thing about death is what I'm learning is, and I've talked to other people about it, is that it's final. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yo, you're reaching for a coffee cup that's not there anymore. You know what I mean? And so you will want to, I can't stress this enough, get it in. Do your side of the street, you know?
Keep your side of the street clean.
100%.
Yes.
And if you know... You know, my mom wasn't the most expressive person, but she was a beautiful human who loved me deeply. But, you know, she was, you know, Irish Catholic, you know the drill. So I always made sure to tell her how I felt, you know, and I just didn't get that one last one in.
Right.
That's it. You know, the last conversation I had with her was about Villanova, and she's like, they stunk it up. They stunk it up in the tournament. But she's like, Jay Wright is a beautiful man. Like, literally, that's like one of her last things. And I'm just thinking, like, that will hit. My grandma used to say it like that, beautiful, with an E in there. So,
yeah.
Dude, it happens all the time. I'll think about it on a plane. It's those moments where you have, you know, no Wi-Fi, no nothing, or you're in the toilet, or you're laying in bed. It just, the thoughts will come in. A picture, I have a picture in my house. The song Danny Boy, the lights are shining. It was her favorite song. So things like that, you know, even like Clovers, because my mom was a big Irish. She loved everything about Ireland. So stuff, little things like that will trigger me, but not all the time. But I've talked to multiple people and they said, you know, it's time.
I agree, though. Get it in. Say what you want to say. You don't know when it's coming. And here's the other thing, too, about people like, a lot of people talk about their parents, like my dad or my mom. They weren't very like outgoing or very loving, but that's their way. It doesn't mean that you can't be your way. And what I mean is, like, you might only get a thank you out of that person after you sit there and tell them everything you think and feel about them.
Mm-hmm.
But that thank you on their world is equivalent to all those words you just said.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Oh, totally.
Like, they can hear it, they can process it, they can feel it. They may not be able to give it back all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They're just, some people are wired differently, but I think, yeah, you should definitely, if you're even thinking about making amends or...
Definitely.
Or, yeah, just do it. Just do it for yourself.
Yeah, and I mean, I just wanted to be there.
Yeah.
I wanted to be able to hold my mom's hand and look in her eyes, you know. But I mean, look, literally she went in her sleep. Like
at home as well?
At home in her bed. Same
wow.
bed. I mean, it's incredible.
Same bed. Your mom and dad died in the same bed?
Same bed.
No way.
I know, dude.
Dude, that's trippy right there. Same
bed. You know
what's
crazier? My sister still sleeps in it. Jesus. Bodies are still fucking warm. She's out there. Making snow angels. Woo! I got room. No, I'm kidding. Please, don't get mad. I'm like, damn. Get right, sleeping right on top of their ghost.
Right on top of two ghosts.
Jesus. Woo! She's going to get so mad. Oh, well.
That's going to be our promo right
oh,
there.
Oh, boy. Fuck it. No, but it's
do you ever talk to your siblings about mom and dad and that stuff? Do you open up to each other like that? You do?
Yeah, we talk about it. Actually, we're much closer now.
Have you found out shit you didn't know being the youngest that like went down before you were born? You're like, that shit happened?
No. My aunt, though, who's almost 100, who's like
wow.
incredible.
Is your mom or dad's, how's she related?
She's D.C., bro, my dad's sister, deep in the district.
Yeah?
Like, we're the
deep
district.
Deep in the D?
Yeah, she's like the stalwart, bro. Like, lived through all the machinations. I think is D.C. nice now?
Everything's nice in certain areas.
Well, she was always where it was popping off,
yeah.
Whatever that area was. And she still lives there, and I have to go and sit with her. She's kind of like the... Oracle, and she'll tell me stories. She's my
the
dad.
Historian. Yeah, they're my favorite. The older relatives that'll start telling you shit you didn't know.
But, you know, it's the only reason I'm like, if I'm weird about talking about it, it's just because I have siblings and I don't want them to think I'm like, you know, making a light, because I'm not. But I'm very at peace with it. I just literally wish I had that one moment. That's
I can tell you wish you had that.
Right?
Was anyone with her that night?
Well, my sister.
Home with her that night?
And her nurse.
So someone was there.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But it's just, it's, you know. Listen, I don't even know what happens when you go or where you go or what even happens, but it's just like I can tell this. I'm very fortunate. I know people that parents have been murdered, you know, or people died in accidents. I mean, I can't even imagine. My heart goes out to people that are just like that.
Yeah, gone.
I can't imagine. Like, and so, you know, everything's comparative. But literally, like I said, I'm comparing it to like a fucking movie.
Let's take a quick break and tell you about our sponsor, Upstart. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy and getting out is hard, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully, now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just your credit score, and they offer a smarter interest rate to help you pay off high interest credit card debt. I wish I had Upstart. I say it every single time. I was in college, I got a credit card, racked up debt, ended up paying off like over $40,000, and I probably paid an interest. Who the hell knows? I'm not good at math, but it was a lot. Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and your job history in the form of a smarter interest rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They believe in you, and they understand that. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate in just a few minutes. And the best part, once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. I said the next day. Over 300,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/honeydew to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes, and it does not affect your credit. That's upstart.com/honeydew. Now let's get back to the do.
Well, we talked about rejection and stuff too, and he came and off mic, and I'd love to hear some of these Hollywood rejection stories. I know there's no sure. So that's the thing any business, but especially entertainment. There's peaks and valleys, and the fucking. Someone was asking me, why do people keep going when the highlights are so few and the lowlights are so many? And I think it's part of it is because that moment, that high is so good and so rich and so right that even though you're only getting a little bit of those and there's more valleys in between the peaks, those peaks make all the difference.
Dude, the peaks are 10,000 times more than the valley. You know what I mean? It's like every time you get a job, it's a lottery ticket. And it's a much bigger lottery ticket. So I was thinking about this the other day, like why you still do it. Because I've actually tried to quit.
How? What did you do to make yourself quit? Just stop doing shit? Or did you really take a job? Or what did you do?
There was a time in the early 90s where I was so fucking broke. This is a true story, and it's not going to sound like it is, but okay, so you do multiple jobs. So I was doing singing telegrams.
You did?
I did that.
Are you a good singer?
I'm not terrible. I can carry a tune. I can do a little shower action. So
people would hire you. You'd go to like what, an event, a birthday, someone's house? Where are you going?
They would. Birthdays, bachelorette parties, anniversaries. It's called Eastern Union Singing Telegrams. That's a real, instead of Western Union. And it was like
it.
Telegrams with a little bit of like, you know, comedy to it. So I did that. I was a party clown and character.
What do you, like face paint full on?
I could do some balloon animals. I had clown makeup, which I really didn't know how to do. So like somebody would do it for me. But mostly I played Bart Simpson.
Wait, like a mask and stuff?
You put a huge Bart Simpson head on. You don't even talk. You just wave.
Okay.
I did that. And I was a Sonic the Hedgehog. Okay. So singing telegrams, Bart Simpson, Sonic the Hedgehog. And those were two different companies. And I was catering. I was living in Koreatown right before the riots. I had a car that was like lost its transmission. So one night, next day I come out, it's 7 a.m. My alarm doesn't go off. I'm living literally in a, it's in my book. I wrote a book and it's, I literally was living in a room behind a room. Like there's a room, it was like a one room apartment and the, there was a refrigerator that was in the wall. Okay, I lived with the refrigerator. So there was a like a little room housing yeah, it. Yeah. And the dude charged me like $80 a month. And he was like, just put a bed in there. And I did. I put like a little futon, boom, and that was it. And go to auditions. And I would wait in line because I couldn't have a real job. So I, because you have to wait in line at the factory. Or wait.
Yeah.
This is when the Improv had 3rd Street, okay, a location down in the promenade. And you could go up at 1 a.m. on Monday nights.
Yeah, that was, didn't the earthquake ruin that, right?
I think
right?
so.
Yeah.
But dude, this was the early 90s, yeah,
this
bro.
This is where A&E Evening at the Improv
yes.
was shot.
And
yes.
it was, you would go downstairs and you'd be doing a set at 1:30 and like you're 20 years old. And it's like you get, and it wasn't, it was, you could sign up and get on. It was amazing, right? But you had to wait in line. So you needed your time. And one morning I came out and I didn't realize any of the fucking signs because in Philly you didn't take them seriously in the suburbs. Maybe you got a ticket. My car was being towed.
You see it happening?
I'm seeing it happening on 3rd Street. The fucking window, dude, was smashed because I left my wallet in there in the glove compartment. I don't know. I used to do that all the time. I don't anymore. And my fucking wallet was gone. Everything was ripped out of it. My license was gone. And there was shit smeared on the seat. On the glove compartment and the back seat. Oh, and half of my clown shit was missing.
Only half.
My wig, my nose, my balloons, and one shoe. So I'm thinking there's a homeless dude or a meth head that broke into my car, punched the window, grabbed the shit, grabbed the clown, is half clowning it up. He's half crusty. As my car's being towed. And I'm like, what the fuck is my life? Like, literally, car being towed, no money. I go back to my hall, and the dude's like, dude, you gotta fucking get your money. You gotta... Anyway, I begged this couple people I knew for money, like $200. And I'm just like, I'm not getting anywhere. Like, this is the worst. I hated it. So I didn't do open mics for like a few days, and I just like looked for jobs and I just like tried to cater. And I thought, well, what am I doing that's any more than quitting? Because when I'm quitting, I'm just being unsuccessful, which is what I was being anyway. So I might as well be unsuccessful
and
try to audition. Because that's, we're all kind of quitting until we get a job, right? So it was like, and I just literally kept, I had nothing else. Like anybody who says this backup plan, please turn off your TV or your whatever. Don't ever talk to me with the backup plan. That's so fucking disrespectful to our business, to art. Like, you know how hard it is? It's like you want to be a fucking star. You want to fucking be great. Well, I'm going to do this backup plan of maybe being a lawyer. Okay. If you're trying to be a doctor, do you have a backup plan to be a real estate agent? No. It's yeah. full. I don't want my fucking oncologist with a backup plan yeah. to just open a yogurt shop. Fuck you. It pisses me the fuck off. There is no backup plan. It's this or fucking death or a needle. You know, comedy is one step away from a fucking bad liver. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's like, give me a break. Like, and you learn that by having nothing. You have nothing and you fucking just, what else do I got? And then I always say to make it in this business, you have to have an insane amount of not balls, but
ego.
No, what's the, when you do something a lot? What the fuck is the word? Drive.
Motivation.
Motivation.
Hustle.
Hustle. And you have to have an insane amount of delusion.
I agree with
so,
that.
So, like, I would always work so hard, and I would wait at any donut shop to get 2 minutes. And then I would bomb for 6 minutes. But, like, in that 6 minutes, if I got one chuckle, just a... I was fucking Rodney Dangerfield. And I'm like, yes! So I thought I was so good. Like, just the so I had this extreme drive and this extreme amount of self-delusion. And that's kind of what helped me. You know what I mean? And yeah. I needed that. I needed that fucking feedback from a fucking stranger in a laundromat. You know what I mean? So that's what I tell people, and that really helps me. But it's like... these people that go in, that's like, well, I'm scared to fail. Well, you're done. Like, don't ever try.
I mean, don't ever try anything in life.
In life.
Forget like, about comedy or entertainment. In life, forget it if you're scared to fail.
Yes.
Life is failure.
Life is, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's also just like, don't even, yeah, like this whole business is just a try. Like, there's so many things that are just a try. And it's just like, you look at it and you go, I could have did that differently. I could have did that differently. It's a fucking try. That's all it is.
What's one of the worst auditions or what's well, we'll come back to today's movie.
Okay.
But give me some terrible fucking honeydew moments during auditioning or getting a part, losing a part, any of that stuff. Cuz I know you've been around. You've been in this business successfully for a couple decades now, which is not only impressive, it's fucking damn near impossible to do. It is, man.
Getting a part or losing a part.
Well, let's just talk about the movie today.
Yeah, man. Let's talk about that.
And so there's a movie out now.
So, yeah, I mean, you wanted a honeydew moment, so I was like reluctant to share. But like, there's a movie out today. It's called Ad Astra.
The Brad Pitt movie.
I just saw trailers
for it.
And it's incredible. I haven't seen it yet, but working on it was incredible. And seeing what it is incredible. And
Walk me through. So how do you audition for this? Were you contacted for this? What happened?
So I had two callbacks that day. So I had a callback for... Murder in the First, or no, True Crimes. It was the one on TNT, mm-hmm. or Major Crimes. It was like the seventh season of that. And it was like a character who was like a director who was like a cokehead. And he was like really loud and obnoxious. And he was always having sex with strippers. So I'm like, this is in the bag. Right?
I'll just need to show up.
Right? That's pretty much... I think we can get this.
I think they wrote this for me.
Right? We can, you know, cue Brett Ratner. I'm kidding. No, I don't know. Am I? So, am I canceled? So I'm like, I go in and there's like eight people in there. They're like, thank you for coming in. They're so respectful. I go in, I fucking destroy it. And I'm like, done. I'll do a nice guest spot. Fucking get a piece of tape. My agent calls me like an hour later. He's like, yo. You were amazing. They love you. You're not the guy. I'm like, not the guy. I'm like, the fucking guy. I'm the guy. Like, I fucking had residue. I'm kidding. But so I didn't get that. Like an hour later, I go in for a movie called Ad Astra. And I have the meeting with the director and casting. And I do the scene 5-6 different ways. Amazing experience. Because it's...
And where are you? Where are you doing this?
In the casting office. And what's great about it is what I call this is the late 90s way of auditioning. You know, something around the early to mid 2000s, the whole business changed where you could get in the room with an auteur like a Tony Scott or James Gray, who's the director of this, or Baz Luhrmann or Wes Craven, and they'll play with you. And you don't have to be what they call off book. Okay. Mm-hmm. You could... kind of know your lines, and they get an essence of you, and they ask you a personal question, and you try it again, then they tell an anecdote, and then you try it again, and then, you know, they go, you want to have a cigarette, and it's like the way it should be, right? They're getting your essence, they're feeling that they want to hang with you, are you right for this character, blah, blah, blah. I've gotten so many amazing parts that way, you know, like a chill session, you know what I mean, like we're doing.
Well, a lot of people have told me too that some people just cast like, all right, we're going to be spending the next six months together. Do I want to hang out with this motherfucker for 6 months? Can I put up with this asshole for 6 months? Yeah,
that's real. And I realize that more and more now as I've done this, that it's like, that is a big part of it. Sometimes I would just overlook someone's personality for their talent. And to me, the talent is everything. But you're right. If somebody could blow up something, that's not great either. But yes, that is a big to do. So I go in and I audition and I don't have any idea. So I thought I got major crimes in the bag. And then I thought, I have no idea about this movie. And I leave and I go to Tampa and I do Side Splitters, and then another week I do Jacksonville, you know, down there. And then I get the call when I'm at Jacksonville. It's like, yo, you got the Brad Pitt. And I'm like, what? You know,
how,
like,
about that? Yeah.
Dude, and I'm fucking like, you know, like, it's so, because it's just, you know, it's like Brad B, I don't even say him Brad Pitt, you know, he's like BP, you know, I mean, it's like to say the name is like, you know, blasphemous. I don't even want to. You know, he's so royal to me. He's one of the last movie stars.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He's like one of the true pandas of our business, like those rare movie stars. And so I get the movie. I work on it. I have three, four scenes. They were.
And where do you go for that?
We shoot it all in L.A.
Okay.
And, you know, the movie's about Brad, his journey with his father, and he goes to three different planets, and one of the planets is Mars. I don't want to say too much. People should go see it, but Mars was, you know, in the script is like a, you know, kind of like a wasteland, and a lot of crazy shit happens. So who better to meet on Mars?
I was going to say, that's where you're showing up.
Right? I mean, it's good. It's perfect for me because it's like, you know, it's like him running into like something that he wouldn't run in. So it's like me being in the movie is like something you wouldn't expect. And so I'm like fucking jazzed, and like people are writing about it. They're talking about it. There's like articles. You can look it up, and it's like boom, boom, boom. And then as like, I guess there was a big screening in like the middle of the summer, and where the trailer dropped. And then the next day, I look at IMDb Pro and my name is not in the credits anymore. And I'm like, what the fuck? Who fucking hacked my account?
This is how you started to find out shit?
Yes. Well, I thought that's odd, right? That's a little weird.
And then it's quick, too. It's like,
well, yeah, but the
that's
movie,
a weird one to pull.
It was literally after the trailer.
Yeah.
So I have a publicist, and I'm like, yo, my name ain't in there, you know, unless my name is, you know, Tommy Lee Jones. I'm not. And so she's like, well, let me call. And then she called. And then they were like, there's a process. I'm finding out. Like, they're still editing and blah, blah, blah. And long story short is, and this happens all the time. It's happened to me a few times. And they just called. And they were like, listen, yeah, those scenes got cut.
And those were the only scenes you were in?
Yes.
Oh.
And they were all with him.
Oh, so you did work with him.
Oh, he's the man. I don't even want to talk about it because it's so royal. That's another podcast. But let me just tell you, everything you believe and you think you know is yes. Yes. If you're going to send a human into space to be the face of Earthlings.
It should be Brad Pitt.
Yes. 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 Amazing human, like beautiful, smells amazing, everything. He's just salt of the earth. I can't even go in. I only got to work a couple of days, but he was... You know, so, you know, and so it's
where
like,
are you when you get this news?
Fuck it. I'm in bed, like literally like sleeping in, and like I'm looking at it, and it's in, and this is what I wanted to talk about on my podcast when it comes out in 2021, but I might as well do it here since you fucking
give us the preview, because
you guys will do it better. You'll edit it. Shit. But like what it is that. It's being able to work with BP is amazing. James Gray, amazing. It's like there's not these type of projects that are made. This movie will be nominated for Best Picture. There's a very good chance it'll win. It'll be nominated for Best Director, Best Actor, Best Cinematography, Best Score. I'm predicting right now at least 8 nominations. Best Original Screenplay. Okay. These are things that are very good. For yeah. one's career.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I love bit. Doing yeah. sets at the Ha Ha, but these also help. So I love driving to the 818 and eating chicken fingers, but I'm just saying. Okay? So I'm fucking, it's getting to work with these people and him is one thing, and it's amazing. Being part of something that when a fucking, the earth blows up a million years later, this will be a top 100 movie. That's another thing. It's called a legacy play, okay? And I've been fortunate to be a part of some of these things. I've also had some things that are coasters. You know, that's part of the career, right? But the, I don't want to say it's the biggest thing, but one of the biggest things about this, and this is why I want to talk to you about it, is it's the fucking perception, man. It's the fucking perception of the bullshit of fucking the wood, Hollywood, okay? It is no different. It's all art. Being an Ad Astra is no different than doing the Honeydew. It is no different than being, you know, in a red box, you know, or doing, you know, a $500 million Avengers. It's all beautiful. It's all art. It's all expression. But Hollywood picks and chooses, right? What it likes, yes. What's important, what's non-important. Mm-hmm. Oh, what's over here? And it's like,
let's send this out to get tested by a bunch of people. And whatever that group's opinion is, we'll listen to that.
Yes. Yeah. So this, so, you know, there's people in the podcast world, as we know, some of them being right here, that are huge, that are bigger than mainstream, you know, and there's people in mainstream that are also huge. And what I'm saying is, it's just the perception of Hollywood going, you know what, why? Because no one in Hollywood likes you until someone else likes you.
That's,
and that's
true.
What I, ooh, that fucking kills me, dude. Like, this is why I always do comedy, because comedy always liked me. Comedy has always invited me in.
We are the home of the degenerates, the fucking forgotten, the fucking underdogs. I mean, comedy accepts everybody. Theater people don't even accept them. I've had theater people be like, I got kicked out of theater. I'm like, you got to do a lot to get kicked out of fucking comedy.
No, but it is like the clubs, no matter how hot they are, you know, or how cold they are, how hot my career is or how cold my career is, they're always like, do you want to come and do a set?
Mm-hmm.
And that is why I will be loyal to it and respect it till the day I die. And that's what I'm talking about with this movie, the play of all the things I said, but how the town looks at you. You know, it's just that's what kind of hurts a little bit, because the town would look at you different. And it's like, you know, it's no... Whether I got major crimes or this, that they all matter to me. But you know how it is.
Yeah.
And that's fucking, but fuck.
What was it like?
Hope to God there's deleted scenes on this DVD. That's what I'm fucking hoping for. Because this director, he's a real auteur, man. So I know he's going to make an amazing
piece. Might be
of
an
art.
Extended version that comes out later.
Well, no, he might just
too,
say, but... I don't want those scenes. I don't know. I'm praying to God. Like, I got to run into him at like Starbucks.
It's going to be called the Jamie Kennedy fucking cut. It goes out on Blu-ray.
But let me tell everybody, go see it. I'm going to go see it. I haven't seen it. I'm going to see it on IMAX. I'm not in it. Maybe my foot's in it. But it's fucked. But hey, but this happened to me before. I was in As Good As It Gets. I had a...
You got cut out of that?
I had a bigger part and then ended up saying one word, which was, yo. I had two scenes with Jack Nicholson that I was in. And then, like, a word or two to him, that got cut. I had it was supposed to be in Boogie Nights.
Were you?
Yep. Who? See, you don't know. The guy that has sex with Heather Graham.
Yeah.
In the limo.
Yeah, Burt Reynolds' limo pulls up in the valley.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would have.
That was supposed to be you?
It was supposed to be me.
The
and
hell
I got,
happened?
I got As Good As Gets.
Is that Burt Reynolds' nephew? Oh.
And then the scheduling didn't work out, so I had to pick. And, I mean, I would have loved to have done them both. But, you know, I went As Good As Gets because my agent was, like, pushing me that way. And it was an amazing experience, too. I love that I got to do it. But so these things happen. You know, I've done pilots. They don't go. But this one, you know, it's just this is going to be one of the – this movie will be around forever.
Yeah. This one's going to be in every highlight film for, like, the greatest movies of all time.
I passed four posters here.
I'll bet.
And I'm like, fuck. It's like a bad breakup. I'm like, Jesus Christ. We get it. Brad's in space. But I'm just... I'm thinking about the bullshit of my privilege, though. Like, if I'm watching this screen, you should be mad at me. Because it's like, honeydew moments are like, you know, I had that needle, the air bubbles going in, the veins. I'm like, my honeydew moment is I cut out of a movie with Brad Pitt. My life is terrible.
I mean, that's part of it, bro. That's
fuck
tough.
It
to get it and then to not be in it. Not like it was given to you and taken away. No. You were in it.
Dude, I have a lot of baggage. Do you understand? It's like, let me explain this to people at home, and you'll get it. You come here, you're this fresh little fucking thing. Nobody wants you. Then people start laughing. People start downloading. Ooh, Ryan, what's he got? Ooh, what's his? You know, that's how the business is. Ooh, got to get on Ryan. It's not talent. Very few people look at talent. 0.5%. Like, it's like they all look at your heat. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So then Ryan's over here. Oh, he's getting it. Oh, Ryan. Oh, Ryan getting jobs. Ryan. Oh, we love Ryan. Oh, Ryan's getting cold. Oh, bad Ryan. I always told you about Ryan. Ryan's a piece
yeah,
of shit.
I always told you.
Fuck
about
Ryan. Ryan's got a drug problem. Ew, Ryan. Fuck Ryan. He's got fucking APSB. He's leaky pants. And then Ryan. Oh, how is Ryan? Where's Ryan been? Oh, Ryan did that. He did that. Ooh. Will you see Ryan? All right, I'll give you. You know what I mean? That's the trajectory. So I have a lot of baggage, good and bad. Not bad, but just like people are like, what have you done lately? Like, if you haven't done a fucking, if you do a podcast at 2, a fucking guest spot at 4, and a set at 8, at 9 o'clock, if you don't do something, you're out of the fucking business. I mean, it's like,
yeah, right.
So, I mean, I've done some shit to get in this movie is a big deal because of, like, you know, I'm not expected to be in it. That's why.
Well, I, you know, look, I hear you on your privilege or whatever you want to say about that bullshit, but you had the Jamie Kennedy.
Very fortunate, yes.
I mean, what a fucking show.
Thank you.
What a fucking show. Before Its Time, Money, you were so fucking good at it. So what I want to ask you about is it was so big. And so how many seasons did you get? Like 4?
3.
3, okay.
3.
After that,
mm-hmm.
What happens? You talk about this cooling off and all this. So what happens right after that show and beyond that?
So I do that show. I'm very hot. And there's something called syndication in our business where if you go 88 episodes, you're golden. You'll recycle your episodes forever.
Like this movie that you got cut out of.
Yes. Thank
you. It'll be up forever.
Yeah. So I saw 4 posters of on the way here. Okay, so fucking you. I did my show, and the W.
Now what were you WB back
WB
then? Right?
WB yeah. decides to rebrand
to the CW.
Yes, okay. So they take Paramount and the WB, and they.
That's right. That was when they had all that, like, Charmed and
yes.
Superman
yes.
or whatever, Smallville.
Yes.
Okay,
and so they decide they're going to make it more like young adult sexy. You know what I'm saying? Like YA. It's called young adult fiction, you know? And so Jamie Kennedy did not fit into that because he was a funny, wild prank show. So we ended. And then Comedy Central really, you're going to love this. This is another fucking honeypot. I got a lot of honeypots.
Honeypot.
Yeah, fucking doo-doo pot. Whatever I'm in. The doo-doo. The doo-doo. Jesus Christ. Cut out the mom stuff.
The
just go right. So fun. This is so. I'm in the doo doo pot. So they got fucking Comedy Central. Is I'm a owner of this show. Part of it. They're really wanted the reruns. Really wanted the reruns, and so the production company said, "We'll make a deal if you do all episodes produced." And Comedy Central said, "No, we're just going to take everything you've ever done." And then if we do future episodes, maybe. And they said, no, you have to take the potential of the new ones. And they said, no. And ABC Family said, we'll do that.
Okay.
So now this is right before Chappelle blew up, but he's in mid-blow up. We go to ABC Family, and they've got, you know, reruns of Drew Carey. So it's like we're behind that. We're on it for 2 weeks. And they're like, boop, ABC Family is fucking being rebranded. And we're going to go young adult.
Oh, that's the Freeform.
Freeform. So it's like I'm kicked out for young adult. And then I go to reruns, kicked out for young adult. Meanwhile, Chappelle's show's running 18,000 times a day. Yeah. And like, I'm like, that show blew up because it's great, but also it's because it reruns so much. And the Comedy Central's like motto was like, rerun the good stuff, rerun. And I'm like, literally like looking at my reruns on ABC Family, like they're not playing. And then, so then I had a movie come out called it was The Son of the Mask, which was the sequel to The Mask. And that did not do well. And so within a span of like a year, my show got canceled, movie tanked, and I had two shows in the WB that I produced, and then they both got canceled. And I literally was like sitting in my living room going, this, but it happened before, and I went down to the Laugh Factory and I did a set. And I just went, and then I went to the fucking Greenblatt and just had a bowl of soup and just contemplated my next move.
Which was what? Like, where are you mentally and emotionally after riding the high of having your own show that you get to, I mean, you're the star of your show, your name's on the show, everything. Where are you after that?
I'm still pretty cocky, and I'm like thinking like,
are you thinking another thing's going to come very soon?
Yeah. I had an offer for a good amount of money on an independent, but my agent's like, you can't do it because it's not good, which, you know, I understand, but maybe I could have did that, but it wasn't a great movie. But I'm just looking at scripts, but nothing's like really coming at me. It's like going to be a fight. And I'm just like, you know, I've never been good at waiting, which is a problem. I think sometimes you have to do that. And I'm thinking, well, you know, it'll something else is going to happen. And then the issue is not, it's just that people hated, they love my show so much, but they hated the sequel to The Mask so much, like crazy amount, that I'm like, this is, that people literally was like, you're like poison. And that was weird.
When you say that, you're talking about people in the industry?
Well, online, and I think, yeah, people in the business, they just scattered from it. Like, no one took credit for making it. And all of a sudden, it was my idea and my baby.
And you wrote and directed it.
And I wrote it. And I directed it. And I funded it. And I distributed it. And Jamie did it. He did it. And it was like, I'm literally holding the bag. And I'm like proud. I'm like lucky to be a part of it. And it was like this thing. And it just, it missed. It missed the mark, you know? And these things happen. And there's 10 podcasts you can talk about why that happened. But. And then it's just like in your agents, you know, aren't exactly, you know, pushing you, or, you know, new clients are coming up, and there's a lot of that. I mean, and you kind of get cold, and you're just, you know what you do? I started going on the road.
You did?
Yeah, I started going and doing a lot. Well, I was doing
the road
anyway.
You started as a stand-up.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You started as a stand-up, so you always have that skill.
So then I started, and that's when I started developing my first comedy special. So I did it came out a year later, but I'd been working on it, and then I shot my first special for Comedy Central. So I did that. You know, but it was like, you know, it's just... The business changed so much, and it's changed so much now.
It's month to month, I feel like, these days. It's changing so much.
Like, you don't want to do TV, because there was a time where if you're doing movies, you're hot in movies, that's where you stay, you know? And then you, like, try to audition, and people don't want to see you. And you're like, yo, I just headlined 3 comedic movies that were successful. Like, you're telling me I'm not... Yo, I've also been in these, like, drama movies that have made over $100 million. You're telling me I'm not... And then people don't want to see you. And you're like, whoa, that's what's weird.
That's a blow, huh?
And then you're like, then you're like blocked. And this is like pre this stuff, and we didn't know what all this stuff was going to be. And you're, so you kind of like, you know, I started with like the places that were like just making me mad offers were colleges and clubs. And I was doing a lot of that, doing, you know, and then I was like, well, maybe my agent's like, you want to do TV? And I was like, I don't know, because you didn't do that.
So you go TV to movies, you're not going back to TV.
Back in the day, you did not do that.
That's like Bruce Willis going from moonlighting to the movies, you don't go back.
You don't
to
go
TV.
Back. And then
but
around
these days, you can do whatever the fuck
now
you
do
want.
Whatever you want, yeah. But you did not do that then. And then I eventually, you know, got a pilot, and that was like a big pilot that, and it didn't go, but like that. And then once people realized I was in pilot, then I started auditioning for TV, and I started doing a lot of TV again. And, you know, and then getting in a movie here, getting in a movie there, and, you know, trying to build my way back up to that top tier material, which brings us back to my honeypot. Whatever. My honeydew.
Yeah, your episode of
my
honeydew.
Pot of rust.
Your podcast 2020.
Yeah, that's what it is. I just kind of did it. I don't even know if I should do it now.
So where are you now? Where are you mentally now?
Like,
what do you are you loving comedy again?
Totally different way, bro. Totally different way. I think you'll get this. This is not how I expected, by the way, this podcast to go, and I like it. I started comedy as a way to get attention,
mm-hmm.
right? And, like, I just wanted to be in this business. And, like, people told me to do it. Like, I'm not one of those people, like, woke up and, like, I dream of be George Goebbels or all. I was always, I will say people told me to do it. Like, different jobs. They were like, you're never going to have a normal job. Be a comedian. So I was lucky that way. And I did it. And when I would do the open mic circuit, I would, you know, there was a lot of open mics in the early 90s, and I was fine to do it. And I'd sign up every night and do it, and I would get two spots a night and work my way up into the clubs. And then the clubs were so competitive that they always said, we want credits. And so then I got it through the clubs. But we have showcase nights. I got a commercial agent, and that was like a boom. I started getting commercials, and then I started getting in the clubs. So comedy, like, served its purpose. And then I got really busy as an actor, and then I became a name, but I didn't have the chops. I only had 20 minutes, and so, like, great people like Rick Overton and Bob Saget, and they would let me open for them, and Craig, you know, the Love Master, he would let me open for him all the time. And so I had these amazing guys, and I would start headlining B rooms to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And so first it became attention for comedy. Then it became, I'm making so much money, and I'm like this name and it's outlet. And then it became like, honestly, this is going to sound terrible, but like in the last 5 years, I'm doing comedy to really tell, to be good. And it wasn't like I wasn't good before, or I wasn't really, you know, I would always have, you know, great shows and sell well and all that stuff. But to really, like, if I'm going to do it, I have to do it to respect the art. And I want to express how I can be good at it. And that's the only reason I do it. I mean, all the other stuff is great if it happens, I really do want to do it now because to be good at it.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds corny. But there's like, that's an honest progression of like attention to, like, I was making a lot of money at it to like, boom. Cause it's, I see what it is now. It's a fucking, such an underrated and still underappreciated art form. And people, everyone thinks they're funny. You're not. Everyone thinks they're a comedian. You're not. It's like, I don't even call myself a comedian. I call myself like an expresser. You know, I think it's such a hard thing to do, and people just think it's so easy. You know, that's why we get heckled, and it's
right. I can do that.
Yeah, yeah. The reason you like the people you like is because they've been through hell.
Yeah,
the good ones have been through hell. All the people that you like right now have been through hell, and I think it makes you better. So I'm doing it now because I absolutely love it. I fucking love it, and I'll do a show anywhere. And I think that's good for me, and because you got to be able to play middle America, you got to be able to play the hipster rooms, and you got to be able to play the store, the main room. You got to be able to touch all bases, my opinion, for me. And that's kind of my brand. I'm kind of accessible that way.
That's great, dude. I'm
trying.
Well, that's what it's all about. I mean, comedy's your first love. It opens the doors up to so many different things. You don't even realize what it's going to open up to, but it's always nice to be able to come back to it.
Yeah.
You know, this is the longest relationship I've ever been in. It's been with comedy. And it's changed. I mean, think about comedy in the 90s and then what it's just the internet.
Change. Yeah.
I mean, what an immediate fucking impact. And then social media, another one. And then podcast. You're just like bang, bang, bang. On the span of a handful of years, it's rapidly progressed. And you have to just, you know, I just started off wanting to tell jokes. And
really?
Very quickly I realized, or, you know, do funny things, but quickly I realized, oh, that's not what stand-up is anymore. That was the 80s. You know, you tell funny jokes for 10 minutes, you got a sitcom.
Yeah.
That shit was changed fast.
I know. But I still like, but I do like jokes.
Yeah, but there's nothing better than being on a stage in front of an audience. That's, people ask me the difference. Like, this, you could record a podcast a month ahead of time. Sometimes you forget what the fuck you say. You know, the line someone's quoting to you, like, I don't even remember. I've just recorded four of these because I got to go on the road and do this. Or, you know, you shoot a movie and you don't see it for a year. But stand up, the drug is the immediate, positive or negative, there is an immediate feedback in that fucking room.
Dude.
Immediate. That's the fucking heroin. That's the, dude. I said this to a room full of strangers and boom, right back, right there on the spot. There's nothing like that. Nothing.
It's so true. Last night I did the fucking Ice House and the crowd was just fire.
How great is that club?
And
I'm there tonight. Oh, yeah, it's yes. A great spot.
And I did 30 minutes. Like, this Bill Devlin, man, he let me close his show. And I got off, and I was so tingly. And, like, a couple people want to talk to me. And I was like, I got to come down.
Yeah.
I got to go into the corner. People, like, ask me questions. It's like, okay, give me 1 minute. But it's like,
I can't go home and go right to bed after something like that. No.
No, and I feel that you're right. It is the drug, and it is. What you're saying of how comedy changed, I guess. Comedy changed in the sense that, when did you start? When was your first set?
Ever? Well, I was 20, so 93 in Baltimore. But I only did it like for a handful of months before I, 7 years later, I came out here and started it for real.
But that's like 10 years in the rest of the cities. Three sets in Baltimore. By that Hooters. But comedy changed because comedy was a freak show.
Yeah.
Okay, my first set was 1990, okay? It was a fucking freak show. You had every archetype, you know, Nebuchadnezzar Jew, you know, lesbian in a vest, angry black guy, you know, whatever. Every archetype that you could think of. And, like, I was, like, I didn't know what I was, but I was, like, this, I always talk about, like, you know who the cutest fucking female comic was in comedy when I started? Me. Okay? Like, there was no remotely attractive fucking people. It was a freak show. Right? You know? And I'm like, what? That was Janine Garofalo was always beautiful. And
Judy Tenuta was in there.
Judy Tenuta was pretty sexy too. It was like Judy, Janine, Sarah, but I didn't discover them until like early 90s. But I started, I'm talking 1990 on the open mic circuit. And I'm like, now comedy is rock. It's like fucking bashing in rock. It's right?
It's rock stars now.
It's
no
rock stars.
Yeah.
One guy in the 70s played Madison Square Garden, Steve Martin. One guy in the 80s, Eddie Murphy. Dice also in the 80s or 1990s.
Right in there.
Right in there, right? It was like a guy a decade. Now you've got five people did it last year, you know, men and women. So it's beautiful. It's a beautiful time, but it is crazy how, like, I mean, it's just how comedy is so sexy now. And it's good. It's just, I am still, like, you know, old school and thinking, like, I am adjusting to it. I'm sure you see that.
I do see it. But I appreciate you coming on here today, man.
Dude, thank you for having me.
This went by fast.
I did.
And I know it didn't go the way you thought it would go, and I'm glad it didn't.
Yeah, like, you know, I fucking, you know, I don't know how I feel about my early part of this conversation. Because
I love hearing you talk about your parents.
Well, I mean, I just want people to be respectful, dude. Fucking put that shit out there. That's my fucking soul, man.
But a lot of people need to hear that, though, because, you know, forever I was the one, I was the same way. Like, I'm not going to give forgiveness or what, and then, you know, sooner or later you hit a point in your life, hopefully you hit a point in your life where you're like, no, I need to get this done and say these things. And, you know, if not for any other thing, then for me, for myself, for my sanity, to know, like you say, keep your side of the street clean, you know.
Yes. Yes. So
I appreciate you coming on. I know that stuff's not easy to talk about all.
No. I mean, I'm using open book because it has other people involved, but it's okay. This is literally the first fucking time we talked about it.
I love it, dude.
Dude, I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming. Promote, plug, whatever you'd like, anything.
Now that we've talked about your dead parents, what's your Twitter handle?
Jesus Christ. Fuck. Wrap it up. Wrap it up with your social media.
Jesus God. Fuck. You know, it's at the beginning. At Jamie Kennedy, the Jamie Kennedy, Jamie Kennedy Facebook, Jamie Kennedy World. Come out to shows.
Yes.
Man. This is the last thing we got, right?
Go see Jamie live.
Comedy. That's it.
Go see him live.
Don't be upset.
Well, thank you, brother. I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, bro.
This is great.
You. Good shit, man.
I am Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com. We'll talk to you all next week.